Hi, everyone. Welcome to a special edition of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hope you guys are doing great. It is here, friends. We are finally on the doorstep. Conor McGregor, UFC lightweight champion, going into boxing for the very first time, taking on Floyd Money Mayweather, arguably the one of the most successful and best boxers of all time. Certainly at the turnstiles and in the bank account, there's no doubt about that. Could close the $1 billion earning mark this weekend, and this fight is, as you guys know, a huge, huge, huge financial windfall for everyone involved. Assuming everything works good with the pay-per-views and everything comes through as they expect, could set the all-time record for pay-per-view buys. It looks to have already set the all-time gate record, according to Mayweather. Huge financial night. It is this unlike anything we've ever seen. Also in sports as well. I mean, this includes the Super Bowl, and just this is crazy. The betting involved will exceed what the Super Bowl, a typical Super Bowl, does. The world will be watching, and you and I will be watching, no matter if we like it or not. So what I did to kind of commemorate this event, and almost like a preview show, in a sense, is I went back and looked at all the different interviews that I did over the past, I'd say 6-7 months, give or take, and kind of looked for where this topic came up. And what I did is I cut some of those interviews and decided to put them all together into one. So you can kind of have a nice little timeline here of what's been happening over the past, looks like 9 months. So I went back all the way to the day that it was, or the day after that it was announced that Conor McGregor actually got his boxing license for the very first time. This would be on December 3rd, 2016. This is the interview I did with Brett Okamoto. So on this podcast, you're going to hear from Brett Okamoto, Kevin Ioli, Patrick Wyman, Mark LaMonica, Josh Gross, Esther Lynn, and also Jack Encarnacio. So this is, again, interviews I did throughout the course of the last nine months, and different topics that came up around Mayweather and McGregor. You think I'd get that right, saying it so many times. So what you will hear is all these different interviews. I'll kind of just intersperse throughout and kind of introduce you to who's coming up next. But we're going to start, as I mentioned, with Brett Okamoto. This is when Conor McGregor first got his boxing license back on December 3rd, 2016. Enjoy. As we always do, there can't be an audio show, podcast, without talking about Conor McGregor. And this week, obviously saw you on ESPN talking about the big news that Conor McGregor has requested and filed for and got his boxing license in California. And it is a big deal, obviously, that for whatever reason, the Mayweather talk never seemed to go away, as ridiculous as it was for those of us that understood that he simply just couldn't go fight Mayweather. And just, you know, the way that I think everyone kind of understands why, for some reason, mainstream media picks up on that stuff the way that they do. But he decided to go, a few days after being stripped of the featherweight title, decides to go get his boxing license, maybe looking to get licensed in other states. And there's a lot of questions about why. Ali Act stuff has been brought up. The Mayweather fight, obviously, has been brought up. And a lot more questions, as always. And the press is on Conor McGregor. When you heard the news and got the story, what was your sense of is this just general posturing? Do you think there's really something to this and potentially a Mayweather fight? I mean, what are you thinking?
Conor doesn't like anybody to know what he's necessarily doing until he does it, you know? And I think that applies to here. So you're left speculating in some ways, you know, because at the end of the day, you can be 99% sure of what something is, but until it's proved to be that, then it's not that, you know? I mean, this obviously looks, I think most people would agree, it looks like posturing, right? I mean, it comes just shortly after the belt is taken away from him unceremoniously on a UFC broadcast, and he's not involved in that. You know, there's no press conference, there's no... if you were listening to the Five Rounds podcast, you heard me speak about this. I mean, that could have been a big event. That could have been something on Fight Pass. That could have been, you know, the two belts sitting in front of him. And he says which one he's vacating. You know, he would have done it in his own Conor way. He says, I'm giving this title back to the featherweight division. I will not terrorize the division anymore. You can have your division back. I give it back to you. I mean, that would be great drama, and it'd be a great way to just build Conor back up even more. Or not back up, just to continue to build up and hype up what he is. instead, the UFC just quickly announced it. You know, seemingly in some ways just to make this interim title between Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis. So that happens, and now he comes out and makes this move where he's getting a boxing license. It looks like, you know, two sides flexing muscles back and forth at each other, Conor and the UFC, which we've seen before. At the same time, like you said, it offers him certain rights as a professional boxer under the Ali Act. It's symbolic in a way, but it's also a real thing. He now has a professional boxing license. He could try to sign with a boxing match, and obviously the UFC would then do legally what it had to do in order to stop him. It creates leverage, but it also, I think, just creates a little bit of a shadow of a doubt of how crazy is this guy. Does he really want to go to war with the UFC and challenge certain aspects of his contract? And we all think probably not, but you don't know for sure, right? And if you're the UFC, that creates a real big problem, you know, and it creates something that you need to respond to, I think, and we'll see how they respond to it.
I'd be interested to hear them respond to anything, you know, have a press conference, have anything with these new owners, or I'm sure you and other people obviously have put in interview requests, and just it's been radio silence. And to hear recently that, you know, they still have yet to meet with Conor, the new owners, that is just amazing to me. Your money draw, you're the biggest star in the sport, arguably, guy that is just can be in that conversation for fighting Mayweather and getting mainstream attention. The McMahon strut, the McGregor strut, got from Vince McMahon. Now all these pro athletes are doing it. Football players, you see us all in NFL games. He's the man, and he's backed up almost everything he's ever said. And the new owners haven't met with him. That stuff just blows my mind. Is that this has been a great book is going to be written about this whole McGregor UFC thing at some point, someday when it's all said and done, because just the posturing between the two, and they've never dealt with a star of this magnitude before. And they're just kind of having to go with it because he is their biggest star. He's their biggest draw. It's so fascinating. This week has been no less fascinating because of all this news.
Well, and what makes it so much more fascinating is that McGregor's rise. And I think, you know, I don't want to say that he's hit his peak because we don't know where he's going from here. But I mean, this was sort of kind of looked at as this was the top of the mountain. You know, Jose Aldo was certainly the top of the mountain at one point. But then once that started to become a reality and, you know, he was winning all those fights and, okay, he's going to get his shot. And then, of course, when he won, immediately the first thing that a lot of people thought about, obviously, you know, in addition to potentially a rematch, but it was the lightweight title, you know, because he was a big featherweight. You knew he could make 555 pounds, and that was the very logical place to go. After this, you know, what is he really going to go challenge 170 and fight Tyron Woodley? I mean, I wouldn't count him out in that fight, but I think he's in a position now where he's at. It may be the peak. It may be the peak of where he's at. I mean, winning two titles in New York at Madison Square Garden, it's going to be hard to really go above that. Again, I'm not saying that he can't, but he's at a very top spot. And it's just interesting that that moment has coincided with the departure of Lorenzo Fertitta, because mm-hmm. Lorenzo Fertitta was always the guy who could make sense of everything, who could calm everybody's nerves. He was, you know, the yin to Dana White's yang, or the yang to the yin. I'm not sure which one is which in that analogy, but he was the level-headed businessman to make these decisions, you know. And with him gone, and now these unknowns of WME, IMG, and Dana running it all, who lives with a lot of passion and emotion, it really adds a stick of dynamite to it. The Lorenzo Fertitta is no longer involved.
I agree. I think that's a great story. I think it's going to be profiled at some point too. One last question about Mayweather McGregor, and then we'll call it good. If that fight happens, proper build, press conferences, Vegas atmosphere, all that stuff, does it have a shot of beating Mayweather Pacquiao in terms of pay-per-view buys, 4.6 million?
Yeah, I believe it does.
I think it does too.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. You always feel like you're crazy when you say something like that, because we know how difficult it is to sell that amount of pay-per-view. It's insane. It's unheard of, really. But you got an MMA star fighting a boxing star. The world would be interested in that. I think it would be Pacquiao Mayweather.
Yeah, I think it would too. I just think of the press conferences and that, you know, with Pacquiao, he just really didn't. It's almost like he kind of needed the ancillary parts to do that. The promoters, the Freddie Roaches of the world, all that. It's almost like they were kind of doing a lot of the talking. Plus Mayweather, and Pacquiao just kind of is what he is. I'm just thinking of Mayweather and McGregor on the microphone going head to head, and how they could build that. If they did, you know, if HBO was the one to have it, or if it was Showtime, they do the specials and all that stuff. I think they could do it in a way that there would be a lot of people obviously would say McGregor's never boxed before. How is he going to do this? But so what? So many people would just be like, I don't care. I just need to see this.
I'll still watch it.
Yeah, I'll still watch it. I think it could. And that would be, my God, can you imagine that? I mean, that would be amazing. Absolutely amazing stuff. What a guy this McGregor is. How did he just come into our lives like this? This is so great.
It is great. It really is great. I mean, I get accused of being, you know, a quote-unquote fan of McGregor, but it's not really that. It's like, this guy's fun. I mean, as a journalist, who covers the sport without bias, I can still say that. That's fact. I mean, this guy's interesting. You know, he makes things fun. And I don't think he's ever going to fight Mayweather, but look how much fun it is, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but just you and I just talking about a fantasy fight between them. I mean, I get sick of it. I truly do. But I think that it's a little bit more interesting now. You know, now that he has reached a place in his own sport where he's got so much leverage, and you know the idea of how much money he could make in just one fight against Floyd Mayweather, it makes it slightly more tolerable to me to talk about it, you know, as it was, you know, in the past when it obviously seemed like they were just saying one thing and like a headline and then it would blow up. And it's like, that's not fun at all, you know? But now it's like, if Conor really does get so angry and so fed up with, you know, his pay, his lack of respect that he feels he's getting, maybe, you know, his inability to get to a negotiating table that he feels he deserves to sit at, who knows, man? I mean, maybe he uses his boxing license and maybe it's not against Floyd Mayweather. It doesn't have to be against Floyd Mayweather. It's just a threat of him in a boxing match. That still would sell very well. He'd still make a lot of money. So I guess it's just, it's more tolerable for me to talk about it now than it was, you know, 6-7 months ago, a year ago, whatever it was when this thing first surfaced.
And now we jump ahead to June 16th, 2017. Kevin Ioli, the one and only from Yahoo Sports, talked to me. This is after the fight got first announced. Busy day, busy couple days for him. So he and I talked about basically the announcement. About how many interviews have you done in like the last 36 hours, 24 hours, give or take?
I honestly think, you know, so I would say yesterday, because I did them yesterday up until I went to bed. I mean, my last one was 10:30 Pacific time. It was like a 20 minute and I went to bed at 11 o'clock. And I would say just roughly counting, I did probably 25 yesterday. And today, when you and I hooked up to do this, I thought this would be my last spot, but I have two more subsequently coming up after this. I would say today, maybe a little bit less, maybe like 15 to 18 so far right now. It's been incredible. And also, you know, I was on UFC tonight. I Skyped into the show and talked about that, which I didn't expect that to happen. And I've had a lot more. I have had so many texts and so many people at the same time that I'm losing track. Okay, did I call this person back? It's like wild.
What is the most common question that you've got over that, you know, 25 or so interviews so far?
If Conor has any chance, you know, it's like what, you know, they ask me if Conor can win. I say no. And then they really push for what infinitesimal way, if it were to happen, if a miracle were to come, that is the one thing that everybody is, you know, really, you know, they all ask about the pay-per-view numbers and all that. But I think that the question that is repeated the most is really just like, how can Conor possibly win this fight?
Do you think that's going to help or hurt the promotion here over the next 2.5 months, kind of the narrative, the talking about, like, I mean, I think everyone kind of seems to get it that Conor is definitely an underdog going into this, but you think that's going to hurt at all? Is that something they're going to have to overcome?
You know, I don't. And now and getting the record, like, you know, you're saying overcome. And when I hear somebody they're going to have to overcome, I think, well, they may, you know, what are they going to have to overcome? They're going to sell 3 million pay-per-views, you know, with just turning the lights on the day of the fight, doing nothing else. And if they promote it, they're going to sell a lot more. And I think this is a 3.75 to 4.5 million pay-per-view fight. That's my prediction going into this thing. I think the negative drumbeat, you know, because people are going to hear over the next 2 months, hey, Conor has no chance, Conor has no chance. But I think they kind of view this as like kind of the light entertainment. You know, some nights you go to a movie and you want to see, you know, some intense drama, with some deep plot, and other nights you want to see Porky's. Well, this is Porky's, and this is what people are going to see, right? And it's like a train wreck, and it's not really a serious sporting event per se, other than the money. But it is, it's one of those things that I think the customer will go in with eyes wide open. It's not for everybody, but I think a lot of people are showing interest, and I think that interest, Josh, is only going to grow as time moves on.
So I've been doing this for about a year and a half. That's the first Porky's reference so far. So definitely five stars for you, Kevin. That is.
I was just glad you didn't ask me Porky's 1 or Porky's 2. That would have been difficult.
We'll have to save that for another time and get into kind of the breakdown of that. But after all the questions that you've been asked about this and with General Sports Talk, and I'm sure you've done a lot of different stuff here the past couple of days, is there one question that hasn't been asked that's really kind of top of your mind that you would have loved to kind of opine on and talk about? Is there something sticking out?
I don't really think so. I mean, some people are more knowledgeable about combat sports than others. And so, you know, I get some interviews where they listen to what I say and they follow up and they ask me an intelligent question. And, you know, you go back and forth that way. And then there's other ones that, you know, like they have a script and somebody told them, here's 4 or 5 questions to ask this guy, and yeah, they follow that script. But there hasn't been anything where I said, wow, there's a glaring weakness. Nobody's asked me about this. I think, you know, in the wide variety that I have done, we've covered pretty much any conceivable angle of this fight that I can think of.
And I'm sure we'll get to every possible angle here over the next 2.5 months. And my next question is, you know, MMA fans, so there, obviously, you know, there's these two kind of different worlds, so to speak, of boxing and MMA, and there is some crossover with fans, but there are some fans that just primarily like either. And we primarily talk to MMA fans and pro wrestling fans, obviously, on our site. For someone that has been in this game for so long and has seen and talked to everyone and dealt with your fair share of bullshit being told to you, you know, probably more often than not with fighters, promoters, all that stuff. And you've seen promotion after promotion, how things have gone and things that have exceeded and things that have not exceeded expectations. What can MMA fans look for over the next 2.5 months for how the boxing world works and how Showtime and how this whole thing is going to come together? How's it going to be different than what they're usually or what they're used to with the UFC and other promotions like that?
That's an interesting question. And so a lot of times you hear MMA fighters say, I love to make that Floyd Mayweather money, or I love to make that Manny Pacquiao money. And so it's the way the two sports are done. I prefer the MMA way because it provides better fights up and down the card. But what happens historically in MMA, I think the culture is, you know, started, you know, by Pride or UFC to have deep cards, have a lot of evenly matched fights. And so you don't just come for one fight and then you promote all of the fights. In boxing, all they promote is the main event. And every once in a while, maybe the co-main event. But it's just, you know, laser focused on whoever that main event is. This week, it's Kovalev and Ward, and you don't even talk about anybody else. You know, in September, it's going to be Canelo and Triple G, and you're not going to worry about who else is there. MMA and the media covers every single fighter. And I wake up in the morning and, you know, if it was boxing, I would know, okay, I'm going to look to see 15 Mayweather stories or 15, Pacquiao stories. it's MMA, and I don't know, is it going to be fights this week? Is it going to be UFC fights? Is it going to be Bellator fights? Is it going to be, you know, Legacy? I mean, everything gets covered. And so you're going to see a difference in the laser focus in the promotion. Just you're going to be so tired of Mayweather when this is all over, because they're just going to hammer, you know, that Mayweather angle, so as well as the Conor angle. You know, that is just going to be, it's going to be on those two, to the exception of everybody else on that card.
So that segues into some of my key takeaways from the media call that happened Wednesday night. And some, I want to kind of run a few of these by you, and given your boxing lens and your UFC lens, MMA lens, kind of what you think of some of these observations here. So one of them, the first one is the decision to make this a quote unquote boxing day, as Dana White put it. A lot of people were wondering if this might be a hybrid card, kind of like what Bellator used to have, or maybe there might be a UFC event earlier in the day. But according to Dana White and everyone involved, it's just going to be a straight boxing day. Did that surprise you at all? Or do you think I was interested in that because, again, trying to attract this other audience being so focused on the main event, I'm surprised there wasn't any effort to do maybe even something earlier in the day to kind of make it a full combat sports day. Were you surprised that they're making it just boxing?
A little bit, but there was some issues there. You know, UFC has a rights deal with Fox. You know, Showtime has a rights deal with Mayweather. So, you know, you can't, you know, can you switch? How can you switch and put what on? And then they want, you know, like I've been in arenas, and I'm sure you have too, where there's been a cage and a ring, you know, on the floor. Those seats are going to be selling for, you know, $7,500 or $10,000 a piece. And when you put a octagon that's, you know, a 30-foot octagon, that takes a massive amount of space up. And so, you know, having that octagon in for preliminaries, if they would do it like that, would just destroy, and you would, you know, take away a massive number of tickets for somebody that's not going to sell anything. So I, you know, that's not surprising that they didn't do that. I thought they would somehow try to have some way of integrating the two, but, you know, I never really fully expected a mixed card, so to speak. You know, I think what they'll do, you know, maybe is have some kind of UFC, you know, highlights and, you know, the UFC area, the UFC experience for, you know, I forget what they call it when fans come up and they can see that. But I doubt that they will have, you know, anything more, you know, beyond that.
Mm. One another thing I noticed is the on the call and the image that or the gift that Floyd Mayweather sent out and so on. The term UFC, I didn't see that anywhere. I saw all the other, you know, promotions, Showtime, Mayweather Promotions, blah, 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 and everything on the top of the imagery. I didn't see a reference to UFC, no logo. On the intro of the call, Conor was referred to as a quote-unquote Irish superstar and not the UFC lightweight champion. My sense is that UFC, in their whole role in this, especially in some of the stuff Dana was saying, was that my impression is that they are simply providing the ability for Conor to negotiate, getting a cut of this, and they're not really quote unquote co-promoters. Is that kind of your sense of how things went with this?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in the grand scheme, that is true. But, you know, you heard, if you were on that call, you heard who the dominant personality on that call was, and it was no question Dana White.
Yeah.
And, you know, he answered, and you heard him, you know, chastising one of the boxing reporters on there. And, you know, he was, you know, Dana was typical Dana on that call. And I think, you know, UFC is going to put their mark on this promotion. You know, they want their brand done a certain way. But Mayweather has a contract with Showtime that provided Showtime with certain rights. And so to get this fight done, you know, Conor and Dana had agreed that, you know, Showtime was going to be in the driver's seat and call a lot of the shots. I do believe, you know, when the fight is whoever the ring announcer is, I'm going to guess it's going to be the classy Jimmy Lennon Jr., but whoever the ring announcer might be, I think, you know, they'll, you know, when he goes through the long introduction, you know, brought to you by – Showtime in association with Mayweather Promotions, UFC, and blah, 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 blah. I think, you know, that you'll hear UFC referred to as in association with. So, you know, I think that they will be part of it from that standpoint, but I don't think that they're going to get too caught up on this because they know it couldn't have happened, you know, any other way given the contractual situation that existed with Floyd.
Right. What do you, kind of the $100 million question as we get ready to close out here is, what do you think it says about the state of the UFC and MMA in general that McGregor had to essentially go to another sport and get a guy out of retirement to earn a payday that's going to surpass his entire UFC career earnings to date and then some? It's kind of crazy when you think about that, right?
I don't look at it quite the same way because okay. I think if you say, you know, like, you look at a baseball player, you know, how many players make $100 million in a season, right? You know, and how many, you know, or however you want to put it, you know, Conor's going to make $100 million more from this fight. And so, you know, in an individual sport, you know, that can happen. So, you know, I don't see it that surprising. I mean, I think, you know, MMA is certainly the equal of, if not the superior to boxing in 2017 in terms of just, you know, the, you know, end to end interest. You know, there's more MMA fans out there, I believe, than there are boxing fans. Now, the one thing that may be different is that, you know, no question boxing fans are older. Demographically, that's proven. You know, I don't subscribe anymore, but I did for many, many years to the Nielsen report, and I would see the Nielsen ratings. And the one thing you would see about boxing ratings, it was always P55 plus, you know, people 55 and older. Yeah. That was the number one audience. And in MMA, it's, you know, 18 to 34 and 18 to 49. And those are the groups that the advertisers target. So there's no question that while MMA has the broader fan base and I think is going to widen the gap as time goes by, the boxing fans are more well-heeled. I think that, you know, there are more professionals that have followed boxing that are, you know, 50 years old, 60 years old, that type of thing. And that is kind of what I would say, you know, when I think of this is the big thing.
Final question. Dana's attitude in the call, very positive, saying Showtime is quote-unquote kind enough to allow them to do some content, UFC embed and things like that. Playing really nice and, you know, not the typical other than that one question you referenced there. Playing very nice with everyone. Do you think this tends to turn at some point? You think somewhere down the road we're going to get a little different tune? Or what's your sense knowing all the big players involved?
I think Dana and Leonard Ellerbe, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, will get along. I think, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see him clash heads with Steven Espinosa a little bit as time goes by. And certainly, I expect, you know, Floyd to take shots at Dana. So I think you're going to see double barrel attack on Floyd from Dana and Conor. I think that's definitely going on. But, Floyd, like I wrote this a while ago, Floyd in his first pro fight wore Dana's logo. Dana was manufacturing clothing for fighters at that point, and his logo was called Bullenbajer Boxing. And he got Floyd in Floyd's first pro fight to wear his thing. And, you know, so now Floyd brings it up, and, you know, I did Dana a favor because he was starving and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he likes to mock him, and, you know, Dana will have it. So I think you'll hear a lot about that. The two of them will go back and forth. And I think, that will add just to the craziness of it where not only are the two fighters bickering, but you're going to have one of the promoters bickering with the other fighter.
We then go to Patrick Wyman. And Patrick Wyman of Bleacher Report and Deadspin and does all kinds of great podcasting work. Talked to him on that same episode that you just heard with Kevin back on June 16th, 2017. And really just got a couple quick minutes talking about the fight and kind of the spectacle and some interesting observations here. So let's get to Patrick. You're talking about, you know, history and making it fun and all this. We were talking with Kevin Ioli for about 20 minutes about this. I don't know if you heard, Patrick, that there's a Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor fighting in August. Have you heard that yet?
I did hear that. I heard something about that. Just a little whisper. Confirmed, right? Yeah. No.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I found out on MySpace.
It popped up on my Friendster feed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So so we have this, and so we talked for a bit about that and tried to do some non-traditional questions. We talked on the interview with Kevin. I asked him, what's the most common question you've gotten this last 24 to 36 hours of doing all these radio hits and interviews. And he said, does Connor have a chance? That's what frequently has come up the most. As you kind of see, you've heard a lot of the chatter about this, some of the stupid banter, as you've noted on Twitter, just the idiocy of some of these mainstream sports outlets and how they're talking about this and all this. Is there one question or narrative or something in your mind that you wish people would be talking about more with this whole fight and this whole affair?
I think that it's not really combat sports so much as it is pop culture. Like, I don't think that you can look at this and compare it to other combat sports events. This is not Mayweather Pacquiao. It's not McGregor Aldo or McGregor Diaz or whatever. This is spectacle. It is pure pop culture spectacle. And you can take that as a negative. I don't think you necessarily have to. I think that this has more in common with a Katy Perry song or a Transformers movie than it does with other fights. In the sense that there is no barrier to entry for having an opinion on it. Like, you don't have to be deep into boxing or MMA to have heard of this and to have thoughts on it. And that, like, you're not trying necessarily to appeal to combat sports fans with it. You're trying to make this a part of a kind of a general pop culture conversation that extends beyond the bounds of any sort of sports subculture. And that's, that means we're going to be forced to, those of us who are actually in this bubble are going to be forced to spend 2 months listening to just absolutely inane nonsense from the likes of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock and Skip Bayless and just a murderer's row of idiots. But on the other hand, that also means that it's going to expose both of these guys to the kind of attention that is impossible to get otherwise. Like, it's just huge. Everybody and your brother is going to be talking about this.
And I think very similar to Mayweather Pacquiao, I equate this to a very highly paid promotional appearance.
Yeah, basically. I think that's exactly what it is. Like, the fight is ancillary. The fight is not even really relevant to all this. Like, what people are buying here is the build and the narratives that come out of it and the bajillion different ways that you can find a way to have an angle on this fight. The fight itself is almost irrelevant to that. Like, by the time the two fighters step in the ring, you've already paid your money, and what you're paying for is not the 36 minutes or whatever they're going to be doing in the ring. It's everything that leads up to that. It's the kind of meaning that you can extract from all of this ridiculousness.
All right, we jump ahead to July 19th, 2017. Mark LaMonica and I of Newsday, Mark LaMonica of Newsday, not me. He and I talked about the Brooklyn tour stop that had just happened and kind of the circus that had come into town, so to speak. Really a bad look for this whole promotional tour, and just the whole night was kind of a disaster. So Mark and I talked about that. I want to kind of get the Mayweather-McGregor stuff out of the way because you headed to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn and last week for one of the four stops that the Mayweather-McGregor promotional tour took, and you were among the thousands and thousands of attendants waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting some more. Just give us, the event has come and, talked to death, but what was your experience in the, I guess, from start to finish with this whole circus that came into Brooklyn?
Yeah, that whole Mayweather-McGregor thing in Brooklyn, I mean, to call it a circus, I think it's kind of insulting to the circus, It was just bad. I don't know how else you say it. I mean, you expect between Mayweather and McGregor, it's not starting on time. I mean, you just know that's going to happen. That's just the way life is. If you've covered one of their events, you know, it's not an anomaly when that happens.
Yeah.
You put them together, you get that double negative. It's not going to be a positive at all. So, all right, 90 minutes, you wait. Okay. Bad, but not a surprise. But you don't deliver. You didn't give them anything after that 90 minutes. You make them wait 90 minutes, and you come out, and you just curse and scream at each other. And, there's no quotes you could use from that thing. without the asterisks or them dash or brackets or bleeps or whatever. It was, you know, forget the quality of the sound in the arena at the Barclays. That was just, I mean, that was probably the worst of the whole thing. And it wasn't even that, you know, it wasn't even the worst, but it was just, awful. You couldn't hear anything. And as the crowd screams, you couldn't understand. Well, you could hear stuff, but you couldn't understand anything except for the B words and the F bombs.
So where were you located in the arena?
I was on the floor just, right, I guess, as they were walking, as you see them walk up that red carpet and that little runway, right next to them, basically. I mean, Connor walking in his outfit, and it was outlandish, and that was worth a chuckle. And then after that, it's just like, you know, I think they need better writers because they had nothing left. And Toronto, hilarious, some of the stuff that they were doing there. Great to watch. But then you get to Brooklyn, and you're like, I think the tour's over.
Yeah.
You know, if they could have canceled London, they would have, I think, after that performance. What I found really interesting, though, is, you know, everyone always says that this stuff is it's for show and it's to sell the fight. And that's exactly what it is, because you talk to them, you know, in the media room back and forth, you give them a legit question, you get a legit answer. Most cases, you know, there's not so much of the bluster and the pomp and circumstance of it all. So in that respect, okay, great. There was some interesting insights, I thought. But the show itself, like, which is what obviously all the public in the world sees and what gets clipped up and spread around in social, that was just something that, you know, I think it turned a lot of people off. I think I had people coming to me here at work saying, this McGregor Mayweather stuff's hilarious. This is great. And then the morning after Brooklyn, they weren't coming around talking to me about it too much.
Yeah, I think you're right that it really only – I'm surprised in this era that they're still having – there's a four-city tour, but they do it, you know, consecutively like this. And, I mean, just that Toronto one alone, they could have just ended it and it would have been – you know, it would have been perfect. There's your – a lot of your audio. That's exactly everything you kind of wanted to get out there in the clips you want to use in promotional packages and, you know, that ESPN and all these other major outlets would pick up. And then after that, with Brooklyn, which was seen as a dud, and then with London, which became really, really kind of got notoriety for the wrong reasons, with Floyd dropping the homophobic slur and the continued use of "boy" by McGregor, and just these ugly elements that kind of brought into it. It was just Toronto really hit this high note, and then. You know, Brooklyn was just really surprising. These guys just didn't, you mentioned the writers, they just didn't, it's tough because they really just didn't have anything else to say. You know, it's not like, like when UFC does some, you know, when they do press conferences and they'll usually do, you know, one. And so occasionally they'll do some sort of tour, but they kind of know when to back off. So at some point, there's not much else to say. And after Toronto, it's going to be hard to top that.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in this sense when he was saying, like, you know, he wasn't prepped, he wasn't told how it was going to work and stuff like that. I give him a little bit of leeway there in the fact that boxing does things completely differently than UFC and MMA does in general. Boxing, the press conferences typically are the promoter, the network guy, the fighter, maybe a trainer. They come out, they say a few things, and then they're done. There's no Q&A. All the Q&A stuff is done beforehand. So that's a little bit different than what UFC typically does. Usually if they do a press conference, there's questions. And you can play off of that and play off the vibe and the excitement. So I give them that, the leeway in that sense. But then once you actually start talking and saying all the crazy things, that it's just kind of discouraging. I mean, even I think as many people who got hyped for the fight after Toronto, just as many said, nah, I'm good, thanks. I'll keep my $100 after Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's still time to bring it back up. But, yeah, it was just kind of it just kind of left things off in a very weird spot. Where is so with your coverage for Newsday, do you know if you guys are planning on covering the fight in general? Are you covering it as a typical athletic event, more as a kind of a public interest type thing? Is anyone going to the show? Like, what do you guys know how you're covering it yet?
No, I don't know that we've I don't know if we've nailed that down yet. I'm not exactly sure what's going to play with that, but listen, it is Floyd Mayweather and it is Conor McGregor. They are two of the two biggest stars in their sports, right? You know, you gotta cover it. We can't just, even if we are disgusted over the last week or so, you still can't turn away from it, especially if it even comes close to that over under on pay per view buys.
Yeah,
which is like 4.9 million.
That is it's kind of the thing with a lot of outlets that may not cover boxing. And I think, you know, the traditional sports outlets that cover boxing now are so few and far between than where they used to be, you know, just over the years, just kind of dwindled and it's kind of gone the way of, you know, horse racing. It just, the way it's covered is just completely different. So it's like when there's an attraction, you're right, you do have to cover it. And because there is a public interest in this. And I think there are people that on both sides that just, they're intrigued to see the spectacle, even if they know that the fight is not going to be any good. And you still have this kind of this loud contingency that seems to think that Conor has a chance, but even though you kind of put all the logic on one side, it appears that he doesn't. There's interest in seeing how it plays out. I don't know. I worry on that, you know, early Sunday morning, East Coast time, when this thing is done, and even going into Monday, I have a feeling it's going to be just like, you know, what happened after Mayweather-Pacquiao, where people are just left disappointed. And, you know, and both guys made out with hundreds of millions of dollars, and everyone's happy on their end, but fans are kind of like, eh. And I just wonder where that leaves us at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think if that's the case, I mean, if Conor wins, let's just say if, right? Let's just pretend that's a scenario that could happen, right? If Conor wins, you're not going to have many disappointed people.
No.
And if they are, they're going to be drowned out by everybody going, oh my God, can you believe it? You know, so you won't hear them that loud. If Mayweather wins, which as most people expect he will, you'll have people going, yeah, well, that stinks. Well, why do we pay all this money for? You know, it's the same thing with Pacquiao in this sense. Like, you didn't get a lot of action, but if you've watched any Mayweather fight since he became Floyd Money Mayweather in the last 10 years, whatever it is, that's what he does. You know, he's a tactical, defensive counterpuncher, and he's very, 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 very good at all of that. You know, but in terms of exciting fights, that's not him, really. You know, so unless, you know, that's what happened, the Pacquiao fight. Mayweather turned into a Mayweather fight. People were so excited and so hyped for this thing. And was it a dud? You know, from expectations and hype, sure, but it was a Mayweather fight. That's exactly what a Mayweather fight looks like. And I don't know what's going to happen in this fight. I mean, it's just shaping up to one of those things where everyone's saying, of course Mayweather's going to kill him. And then people are like, well, then you start thinking about it because you're like, oh, I need something new to write. Oh, McGregor's got a chance. Here's how, you know? And now you're like, is it August 27th yet? Let me know when it's the 27th so we can start talking about Golovkin against Canelo.
We then jump ahead a week to July 27th, 2017. Josh Gross of The Guardian and obviously of Ali versus Inoki fame, he wrote that book. We talked about the comparisons that Mayweather-McGregor was getting to Ali versus Inoki and kind of this truly mixed martial arts style, if you want to kind of call it that, and just some thoughts about the fight in general. So let's get to Josh Gross right now. Last time you were on, I believe fall of last year, we talked a lot about Ali Inoki, and obviously people can hear your interview with Dave and Brian on this very site for the basic kind of the background and all that stuff. But I heard Ali Inoki get brought up and your name got brought up again when Mayweather McGregor got announced, and people just trying to make any crazy comparisons, any type of like tie-ins that they could. And that fight got brought up. So it almost like, did you get a few more interview requests and a little bit more interest, a revived interest in the book when that got announced?
I did. And it didn't hurt that it was right around the anniversary of the match again, end of June. So the timeline kind of worked. Ariel Helwani had me on his show, and Chris Jericho, I did an interview actually with him last year, but he happened to put it out right around this time. And for him, it worked out too because of the Mayweather-McGregor thing. I've had some other interests from different people because of that tie-in. And I'm not complaining. I mean, I appreciate the discussion and people bringing it up. And I think you can make some comparisons. Some of them don't work. They're a bit of a stretch. But for me, any reason to sort of bring up the book and bring it up as a topic, and I love that Conor McGregor actually mentioned it in the first press conference. You know, I was like, ooh, is he going to do this every single time? And he didn't. But, you know, it would have been nice if he did. But, you know, it gives me a chance to say, hey, look, this is what I wrote, and this is actually an important event in the history of not only mixed martial arts but combat sports. And, you know, I think it's something worth looking at. And if you want, you can try and draw some parallels because – yeah, you can find them. They're not too hard. You know, this is its own thing. It does go down in sort of that category of an event fight, a novelty, a one-off, a sort of a crazy thing. And we don't have much of that in this era. You know, 30 years ago, there was much more of that, in the 70s especially. So, I mean, it's like George Foreman was fighting four people in Toronto on ABC Wide World of Sports. You know, it was like one of those things in a different time, a different era. So this harkens back to that, and I think people made that connection. Mm.
You've probably talked about Mayweather-McGregor to death, but give me 60 seconds on what you make of everything you've seen so far.
Pretty astounding that Conor McGregor has put himself in this position. I think that's the first thing. One, just as a fighter, no matter what your discipline is, to have gone from where he was 5 years ago to where he is today is just an incredible story. Two, again, sort of the merging of these combat sports. I think anytime you have a mixed style competition against a boxer, it seems to generate public attention, it seems to generate interest. I sure would love it to be a mixed fight, but it's a boxing fight, so it's its own thing. And three, you know, the fact that it is boxing, the fact that it is Floyd Mayweather going to 15-0, fighting a guy who's never had a pro boxing fight, and the fact that it's just such an apparent money grab, and, you know, the whole thing with the IRS. I mean, it's so transparent for what it is. And initially, I was sort of up in arms about it, and I was like, oh, this is a joke. But I've backed off. I've kind of like learned a lesson from the book that I wrote. It's like these event fights, these moments, they're okay. You know, they're not a statement on one, you know, on MMA or boxing or combat sports. It's Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor coming together in a combat sports event, and the public sure seems invested in it. And so that's my takeaway, just in a quick wrap. The fight itself, I mean, I'm not expecting Floyd Mayweather to lose. I would be shocked if it happened. And it would be what a sporting event that would turn out to be if somehow Conor McGregor did the Mystic Mac thing on Floyd Mayweather. Are you kidding?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think this, to me, just illustrates how much in this world of our eyes and attention's being pulled everywhere in every type of medium, no matter what, that there are certain things that just stand out, and is this mass of people are like, you know what? I'm interested in that. That's getting my attention. And it's fascinating because people like you and myself may be like, oh my God, we see it for what it is. But a lot of people also kind of see it for what it is, but they just don't care. They're looking to be entertained and taken away from their 9-to-5 job or something like that. And they're just like, you know what? I want to be entertained. And I don't think the fight is going to be that entertaining, but I think that just the spectacle and all this stuff, it is just such a unique thing on this scale that I just think there's a group of people and millions of people are going to hit that buy button on the remote, and they just want to be taken away for a night. And, you know, it's hard to disagree with that, and it's hard to tell them you're doing the wrong thing. It's just, you know, it happens time and time again. We have had this discussion of how pay-per-view is changing so much. But, you know, I think we're going to get to a point where these things don't happen anymore. And we're going to look back and be like, oh, yeah, you remember this. And the big event is going to be, especially in fight sports, I think is going to come to a close at some point here in the next few years.
It's, you know, it could. It seems to be trending that way, and asking people to shell out even more money than they already do is a difficult thing. Where, you know, I think we've seen the UFC, their pay-per-view numbers have not been what they were. And when Conor fights, sure, but when everybody else fights, it just seems to be not the kind of attraction it was in the past. And I think there's some risk here. Look, boxing took a hit after the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. That was a bout that had so many expectations and had been in the zeitgeist for so long, and now we're sort of like thrown into this whirlwind of Mayweather-McGregor. I think no matter what, it's going to be fun, you know, whereas Pacquiao Mayweather ended up not being that great a fight and people felt like they were fleeced in the end and it didn't live up to the hype. No matter what happens, I think Conor McGregor will make sure that this is an entertaining fight. You know, whether he goes out in a shield or something crazy happens or he's exposed. But I think he will ensure that people will leave feeling like they didn't get fleeced. That's my sense. That's just a guess, obviously. I have no idea. But that's my sense of it as we approach it. And I think that's important because, you know, if it comes in and it's apparent that this is just a cash grab and he's totally outmatched and Floyd can kind of pick him apart and it's boring for 12 rounds, people are going to be really pissed. And this may be sort of the end of pay-per-view. You know, I think Floyd going from the Pacquiao fight then to this Mayweather cash grab event fight, you know, it's going to be very difficult for people, for audiences to get attracted to regular boxing. And that's a shame because, you know, a couple weeks later you have Triple G and Canelo, and that's an amazing boxing bout, just a great boxing bout between tremendous boxers. And you wonder how much of the public attention it can actually grasp in the wake of this thing. It does feel like Mayweather McGregor is sort of swallowing up everything in combat sports until it happens. Mm-hmm. 214 has sort of been a victim to that as well.
All right, we're getting closer. This is Esther Lynn of MMAfighting.com and also Showtime. She was getting some great shots of the tour, the promotional tour, and also some of the recent the Conor McGregor media appearance, the open workout that he did. She got this great shot, there's a great shot of her trying to get some great shots, some overhead stuff. So she talked about that and also her her thoughts on the Toronto tour stop and some of the exhaustion that she felt just kind of seeing this promotion play out day after day. So let's get to Esther Lynn's thoughts right now. So recently, there's so many things that we could start with, but I want to ask you about your recent act as a superhero, scaling the rafters, taking some great shots of Conor McGregor just about mm-hmm. a week ago, and a very, very famous shot made its way around Twitter. You on literally a rafter above, I don't know if it was the ring or above really where he was training, but I guess, you know, we've seen skilled and excellent photographers do anything it takes to get the best shots, and you went up top. What was the impetus to do this, but what inspired you to take your life into your own hands and get some good shots of Mr. McGregor?
Oh, well, so at Mayweather's gym, at least with the Showtime crew, we've got some ladders stashed underneath the ring of varying heights. Most of which are higher than I was when I was climbing on the it's like those were the beams that hold the bags up mm-hmm. over the training area. So most of the time I will get on a ladder and go high up, which obviously is a lot safer, although not safe still with all those people bumping around. But I wanted to get up high and I wanted a shot where I could see how many people were there, and the producer for All Access said, if I could help you get up there, do you want to go up there? And I said, absolutely. Because she asked me, she's like, where do you want to go? And I pointed right on top of the rafter. And she was like, you want to get up there? And I was like, yes. She was like, okay, let's figure this out. So we looked around and she asked one of Connor's sparring partners. And he was like, yeah, I'll help you. But then he kind of disappeared for a couple seconds. So one of the guys that shoots the Mac Life, Colin, gave me a boost so I could climb onto the bag because I'm kind of small. So I climbed onto a heavy bag, and then from the heavy bag, I climbed onto the beam, and I just kind of inched forward because at first I thought the beam was about, I don't know, I'd say about 5 inches wide or 4 inches wide. So I was like, this is not a big deal. So I started to move kind of fast, and as soon as I started moving, I realized it was not stable. I mean, it is stable, but it's smooth. So I kind of almost nearly fell. So I started slowing down and I started inching forward and I thought, okay, this is going to be a great shot. But the closer I got, since Connor was actually hitting the bag that was on that beam, the more it shook.
Yeah.
And also I realized that there were so many beams because it's a huge lattice system and so many other bags that no matter how close I got, like, there was always going to be some kind of obstruction in the photo. And so I got really close and I was disappointed to find that the photo I took compacted him a little bit. It made him a little flat. because of how wide I had to shoot it in order to fit everything in and try not to get any of the other bags in. I just wanted to get up there. I needed a shot from above, and that was the highest point in the room. So
one of the best pictures I've seen this year, best shots, was the shot you got from behind the fighters, Mayweather McGregor in Toronto. Mm-hmm. That was basically them just pointing at each other. And it was mm-hmm. just everything about it was so great. Out of this whole tour so far that you've been on, both with that stuff and everything else and with Mayweather McGregor, what stood out to you the most?
So that was a really rough week not just because of the schedule, but because by the end of the tour, I had felt like I had heard enough of bitch. Yeah. and all of the just terrible things they were saying to each other. And I really wanted some more creative shit talk, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was getting tired, and it was really difficult for me to focus, because when you hear the same thing every day, it gets really difficult. And I actually missed the New York press conference, so I apparently missed the worst one in terms of what was said.
Yep.
Because I had to catch a flight to London. Out of all of it, the thing I did take, though, was just there's something. The whole time that I was doing MMA and I was doing UFC, I was also doing boxing on the side. And I've shot Mayweather's last five fights up to this point. And, you know, when the UFC did their 205 event and when they did their 200 event and all this stuff, and it was this big thing, I really held on to this fact that, like, people don't realize how big a big boxing event can be. Like, people don't really know how big something can be. Yeah. I feel like I'm glad that I was able to take that image in Toronto, and I'm glad they did have one stop that was outdoor, because all the indoor stops don't really show you the feel, and the light's not good enough. Not bright enough for me to be able to show more of the people in the background. And Toronto was perfect because it was bright enough that I was able to show the crowd with the same exposure that I could show Mayweather and McGregor. Mm-hmm. So you could really get a feel of how many people were there. And I was so glad to finally be able to convey to people it's funny. I keep getting all these comments on my Instagram like, hey, our girl is shooting boxing too, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I've been shooting boxing for 7 years. it's just that no one ever paid attention because most people follow me for MMA. But I've been shooting these big events, and I've been trying to get people to like see these epic things that I'm seeing. And it was nice to finally get to share that with more people now that Conor is, you know, just as big. I'm able to finally like share all these images with a wider audience, because I took, you know, some crazy images when I was during the Mayweather Canelo press tour in Mexico City. 30,000 people showed up to that press conference outside, and including riot police, which was another story entirely. Huh. I never got to really, not enough people saw those. Not enough people saw just how big some of these things have been. And I was really happy to be able to just, I don't know, to share that, to see people, to get that feeling. Cause that feeling that photo gives people, that's how it felt for me. Like I was, heart was racing. I was excited. I was hiding in a podium trying not to be seen. Like it was just, I'm so glad that photo exists and it's there, and that image, and it is exactly what it looked like to me.
And finally, we wrap up with a talk we just did, actually just this past week. So if you heard this, this is why it'll sound familiar to you. Jack Encarnacio from Sure Dog and the Lapsed Fan and the Boston Herald. This is kind of your last preview of the show. We basically just talked about the fight and talked about the spectacle and why he's all riled up for the fight. And while I'm very excited to kind of see everything pass. So again, this is kind of your last exit to Mayweather and McGregor. Main event time, Jack.
Yeah,
we're here.
We are.
We're in Las Vegas. We're walking into T-Mobile Arena. We're about to sit down and we're about to see a very well accomplished professional boxer take on the UFC lightweight champion of the world in his very first boxing fight, 8-ounce gloves, and a lot of money is going to be on the line for a lot of people betting, for everyone, for all the main participants, both in the ring and outside the ring. Mayweather McGregor, it is here. We're on the doorstep, and I don't know about you. I am ready to move past this very quickly, and I am just I'm done with it. I don't know what it is. I've been, you know, I don't know if it was the press tour, obviously Toronto aside, but just I don't know if it's just the boxing promotion, which I just don't like. I just find it very dated and very slow and very blah. I don't know if it's the whole Malignaggi stuff. I mean, there's been some fun aspects of it, but I'm ready to see McGregor do his thing in the UFC again, and who knows if we'll even see that. But I'm kind of ready to move past this as quick as possible. Are you on that board? Are you fully strapped in for Saturday?
I got to say, I'm fully strapped in.
All right.
Yeah. I don't front when it comes to stuff like this. I know the truth, which is that this is why we come to the table. And we can find virtue in virtue signal the fact that we want to see the best fight the best. And we're fans of the purest distillation of whatever combat sport we're talking about. And that can all be true. But we all know that when a fight like this comes along, come Saturday, people know the truth. And they get their ass in front of the television where it belongs. And that's what's happening here. I mean, these two guys have reinvented fight promotion. They've shown boxing how UFC / WWE style promotion can make all the difference in the world and elevate a guy with positively zero pro fights to a stature that he draws more money than anybody ever has in the history of the sport. You know, of course, with Floyd is very, very strong support there. Not to suggest that Conor fighting anybody would do these kind of numbers, but I can't not be there. I can't not see what happens. It's like Tyson and McNeely, really. I mean, it's like No one thought McNeely was going to win, but everybody knew the truth that this is massive. This is culture. This is this is like tantamount to not watching the moon landing. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, be there. This is a cultural moment. And even if it costs $100, doesn't matter. Find a way, and people will. And when that happens, I step back and I cast aside all of my pride and my self-identification, how I like to think of myself as a smart, engaged, and historically steeped fan of combat. And I just let the spectacle wash over me, because that's the appropriate thing to do as an American. And I'm going to be all American on Saturday. This has been something else.
You're going to be wearing the Hulkamania shirt and waving the flag or a 2x4 Hacksaw Jim Duggan style. I mean, what are you thinking here?
No, I'm just going to have my regular clothes on, but I'm going to be completely transfixed by the possibility that Conor lands on Floyd.
Boy, Jack, come on. You think what percentage chance are you giving Mr. McGregor on Saturday? 5%.
Keep in mind, I did not say that I expect Conor to win. I'm transfixed by the possibility. And that's what we show up for, is the possibility. It's like I can picture in my mind's eye how epic a moment it will be in history if he finds a way to do this thing. And no matter how likely or unlikely it is, I can't in good conscience not be there to see whether it happens or not. And I won't feel like a sucker if it doesn't, because I've been down this road enough times with Mayweather fights looking to get that O obliterated, that, you know, I expect 12 rounds. I expect, you know, one of the best defensive fighters ever, this side of Pernell Whitaker, to shoulder roll, to duck and exit out the side, to work the perimeter of the ring, to, you know, place careful straight rights, check hooks, and just do what he does to completely leverage to the hilt the rules of the sport of boxing, to game the whole thing in his favor, to not fight and beat somebody's ass, but to win per the rules of boxing, and to bend the rules of boxing in ways that advantage him and escape the visage of the referee. And I am just fascinated by what, if anything, we notice that's different when a lifelong MMA guy gets put into the strict rules of boxing. If we see any looks that aren't unconventional, that we're not used to when we watch traditional boxing, if he's capable of muscling Mayweather in the clinch in a way that boxers simply don't train to do because the clinch isn't as diverse an option in their sport as it is in MMA, and so you don't build the same muscle and instinct and thoughts about how to use the clinch because, you know, you're so much more limited in what you can do from there. Mayweather's used elbows his whole career. He only throws them when he's kind of outside the visage of the referee so he doesn't get penalized, but he puts elbows out on his opponent's neck area and back when they're looking to clinch with him. And then as soon as he gets distance, he pops him in the face. And McGregor knows how to do that. McGregor naturally will think to do that. So, you know, I mean, just because I can find all of these points of interest doesn't mean I think Conor can beat Floyd Mayweather. I do not think he can beat Floyd Mayweather. I don't think anybody can beat Floyd Mayweather this side of Triple G, and I don't see that fight happening in our lifetime. So, you know, I'm just in it for those moments. I'm just in it for the moment where everybody else in the room is going apeshit, and I'm sitting there completely, you know, freaking out silently about how epic this might be. I mean, just how can I react? How can my reaction be in tribute to how epic it would be if Conor wins? It can't. I mean, I just don't know how you can express. I'd probably just laugh, right? Just laugh uproariously. That's the only thing I could think of that would fit that moment. So got to be there, man. Got to do it.
Well, make no mistake. I will be watching for sure.
Damn right.
There's the build to this. I'm glad it's been concise, that it's been 2 months, because I think 6 months of this, you know, if one of the guys get injured, something like that, I think that would be exhausting, I think. And especially I'm glad that both guys did not get hurt. And I'm fascinated to see from the basically what happens after, 1 a.m. on Saturday night is, you know, where is everyone, you know,
mm-hmm,
where
right.
is. And so I think I think the best case for UFC in Conor is that Conor wins. I think realistically they're looking for a good showing.
I have to disagree with you.
Okay.
I think the best case scenario for the UFC is Conor last 12 rounds, gets some licks in, but does not perform in a way that anybody wants to see him box again, and they can actually get the guy back in the octagon.
Yes. Okay. Very, very true.
But if he beats Floyd, you can forget about it. He's gone. He is gone.
So if he was to win, what would he do? Just be done with everything?
What do you mean?
Well, so if Conor was to win, say he was to win either.
Then it's Paulie Malignaggi. Then it's.
Do you think he would actually go to that? He would stick with that. Okay.
Yeah. The payday is Jesus. I mean, they're already setting it up. I mean, the payday is like 50. No, I don't want to go get into figures. Umpteen times more than he could hope to make in the UFC.
Right.
I mean, it's just insane. I mean, that's why boxing's where it's at. And that's why all these guys with, you know, great life, Jose Aldo, Junior Dos Santos, Stipe Miocic, they all want that taste. They know the truth that, you know, boxing can set you up for life with some of these paydays, and UFC can't. It can set you up comfortably, but it can't set you up for life.
Isn't that crazy that even though as big as UFC has become as a brand and well-known when it comes to fight sports, that, you know, the UFC's biggest star had to go to boxing to get life-changing – you know, he said life-changing money, but this is like mega life-changing money. This is continent-changing money.
Well, there's just so much more. It's such a more open-ended structure in terms of how the profits are divvied up. That's the difference. You got two promoters coming together. Like Mayweather-Pacquiao was HBO and Showtime coming together and figuring out ways to split the money. Mayweather Promotions, you know, while Showtime is paying him, make no mistake, per a contract. I mean, they're contracted with him alone as a fighter, as an entity. They're not contracted with a whole company with a stable full of guys that get kind of like these static percentages that leave, you know, huge profit windfalls for the organization to put back in to their pocket or to put back into the organization and build it and grow it. There is no organization. There's one fight. And everyone splits up whatever comes in on that one night and everyone moves on. And if you want to do it again, all the parties have to come back to the table and figure out every last detail again. There's no McDonaldization of this where it's like a totally straight, staid way of doing it, setting it up and divvying up the proceeds. It's up for negotiation every time. And that's why you can make so much more money in boxing, because you know, Conor has said it. I'm sure it's true. He's getting a percentage of the damn concession sales. If you get nachos at T-Mobile, he gets a cut. You think anyone ever, as long as the UFC is going to be around, is going to get a percentage of the nachos? Give me a break.
Maybe Cody Garbrandt.
Well, by get a percentage of the nachos, I mean get a percentage of the money, not actually eat a percentage of the nachos, which there are several heavyweights on roster that I'm sure have availed themselves.
Very true. Very true. What is so we talked about the best case. What's the worst case scenario?
For who?
For say Conor and the UFC. We'll put them in one boat.
The worst case scenario. He gets first
round knockout?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to say first round knockout, because then you really have bruised his allure. He'll come back to the UFC, so it's not all bad, but you have bruised him in a way. He's a mastermind. He can work around it. He can work around the public perception and find a way to, I'm sure, recalibrate it in the MMA fan's mind. It's not really counting, as you know, just an illustration of how big of a risk taker he is and will continue to be, as opposed to some kind of thing to hold against him. But, you know, of course it'll hurt him. I mean, the Nate Diaz loss still haunts him, and he avenged that at the precise same weight in a convincing way. And still, it's just, you know, can you imagine if there's some viral moment? You know, that'd be one of the most retweeted things ever if he just takes him out in the first round, if Floyd does, or vice versa. I mean, Jesus, it's going to be all time in that regard, no matter what happens, if there's a stoppage. But yeah, I would say that, because then you get damaged goods back, but you still get Conor back. So it really is a different equation based on who you want to say it's worst case for. I mean, I think worst case for the UFC, as weird as it sounds, is Conor blitzing Floyd and killing him, because that's it. That's the last payday they make off Conor McGregor. I'm confident of it.
Yep, I would agree with that as well. Final questions here as we wrap up. What through this whole promotional tour and, you know, since the fight was first announced to right now, of course, there's another press conference scheduled for tomorrow. But what has been your highlight? What's been your low light?
That's a good one. I would say my highlight was when Conor took the microphone in the beginning of Toronto after having had his mic cut in L.A. for the first stop of the tour and said, does this one work? Well, fuck this, and smack the other mic. Because that announced that, like, what's been so money about this dynamic is not the sell job on whether Conor McGregor can figure out pro boxing in the space of 6 months and beat one of the greatest to ever do it. It's the fact that he carries with him a set of fighting skills that, if you took it outside of the boxing ring, he could kill Floyd Mayweather. He could, like, take him down and strangle him. And there's something to be said for that. That's in the air when they face off. That's been in the air when they've come face to face. And it's really part of what makes this fight magic is the MMA versus boxing dichotomy, and just, you know, the constant question we've always pondered in terms of, like, you know, how much can a boxer claim to be the world's greatest fighter? Every other fight Floyd Mayweather has had has not had this question as part of it. And so that's what makes it a unique spectacle. That's what kind of elevates it, puts it in a different category. And so when he did that in Toronto, I felt like it was – and he got in Steven Espinosa's face from Showtime and called him a weasel. It's like this guy is going to break down all the taboos, because he's not married to Showtime financially. You know, they're not the ones that are going to pay him for this fight. Dana and the UFC are going to pay him for this fight. They're his promoter. I mean, he needs Showtime to make the fight happen, but he has no allegiance to them. He doesn't have to kiss their ass. And when he did that, it was like, okay, that's what's going on here. That's what's special, is the gloves are off, and Conor has no reason. He has no rules he has to play by. And I think he leveraged that brilliantly. He just he figured out – he did exactly what, you know, Steve Austin's character would do, you know, figure out, like, where the levers of control were, who was trying to put their thumb on him and force him into a box and just scream, like, you're not gonna, not only are you not going to control me, but I'm going to tell everybody right now that you can't touch me and you won't do anything. You'll sit there. And that's exactly what they did. So that was money. And that to me brought it forward into great relief. What was special about this fight is the place Conor finds himself in the structure of how fights are set up and how unique a position it is that he just doesn't have to care, and how good he is at not caring and broadcasting that. A low light.
Yeah, something that didn't make you feel very good when you know, it just didn't sit right. You're like, oh boy, did they have to do this? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I mean, you know, of course you're tempted to say, but I don't want to make it just about the press tour either, because there's been so much more that happened, but you're tempted to say when it got racial in New York, you know, when it came to like, okay, that the narrative of this stop on the press tour is going to be race, you know, and Connor just saying tone deaf things in response. He got away with it. It's fine. It's, you know, he's not going to pay any kind of price for this. There's no way for these types of fights to not be about race. I mean, this is 2017, you know. It's going to be about race, and it's not going to change. But I felt like that was kind of like, oh boy, now we've got to deal with, like, you know, a month of like think pieces about like how this represents, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The moment we're in. It didn't turn out to be as tedious as I was concerned it might be. But that felt like a low light, like, oh geez, this is just going to be about people who like really don't care about boxing or combat or anything, just kind of using it to score their own points, you know, from a far periphery, and just taking up all the oxygen about the fight and making it a political thing. And it happened, but it didn't. People got in line. People realized that, you know, this is about fun. And so, you know, it had the potential to be a much lower low than it ended up being. But that comes to mind right away.
Yeah, I would say Toronto. I think that whole event was just a lot of fun to watch. The crowd was into it, and just it was. You know, I was talking to Esther Lynn last week, and mm-hmm. I was talking about how she, you know, she shot that, and she had this really just amazing, I don't want to say iconic shot, but just amazing shot of from the back of the stage, and Connor and Floyd pointing at each other, and you can see light in the background, you see all the fans, and she said the best thing about Toronto, or one of the best things about it, was the fact for shooting it was the fact it wasn't in an arena. Right? It wasn't dark. You know what?
Yes.
You could actually get the scale of all these people in back. Mm. And it just made for a completely different dynamic when shooting, and it made everything feel so much bigger. And that was one of the things that stuck with her the most from going out on those tour days. So I think Toronto in general, I think, was just it was McGregor unleashed, you know, and
the, yes.
you
mentioned yes, the Spinoza
stuff. It just felt, you know, the cliche, the chains are off. It just felt like he just literally just threw the chains off, and he's like, this is going to be me, and I am this yes. is who I am. This is what brought me to the dance. So let's go.
And after how flat LA was, it was so concerning to me. Like, oh my God, this thing's going to get watered down because Showtime is going to insist on their rules about how press conferences go.
Right.
And we know how bad boxing press conferences are compared to UFC press conferences. And they're way out of their element. Connor and Dana, they didn't know what to do. They were almost, I think, purposely being misled as to the itinerary and who was going to speak when. All these audibles were being called when the usual parade of executives in suits stepped to the microphone to get their slice of the credit, and the crowd was having none of it. You know, and that's why the smacking the mic was so powerful, because it's like, no, Connor will get the chance to be Connor and maximize the revenue potential of this fight.
Exactly.
And you know what I mean? Well, there was concern after the first day that he might not be able to do that per the constraints.
Yeah. And I think the low light was Brooklyn, just because it followed this amazing thing that we saw in Toronto, and it just felt too much, just like it felt like a bad show. Both guys and Floyd doing the same gimmick with the bag and the yeah. And then,
oh my God.
And this, the Forum Voltron thing, that was kind of a weird thing. And just, it didn't, you know, Connor with the comments and then the whole, it just felt too forced. It felt like new writers got brought in and this was like, is their first shot, and they're just like, okay, let's reboot this thing, or let's, you know, make some edgy character changes. It just felt
totally.
It just didn't feel right. I think that was my low light, just because they were so contrasted. Being in London, London was okay in spots. You know, Los Angeles, you mentioned, that was just completely flat, and I think it was a warning sign, not a warning sign, but I think a lot of us were, you mentioned, worried that, is this what the whole tour is going to be like? Is this as boring? But yeah, I think Toronto was a big high. I think Brooklyn was a low.
Yeah, I think so too. Brooklyn, you know, the thing about Floyd, and Dave has pointed this out, Dave Meltzer, and I think he was right on the money, It's like we realize when we see this kind of a setup that Floyd is not the great promo he seems to be on 24/7 and All Access when he's edited and when his actual moments of lucidity are isolated to make it look like he makes great points all the time and is always in line with the character. I mean, this guy cannot come off the top of his head to save his life. No. And Connor can. And that was another thing that was so electrifying. And people were like, yeah, Floyd won. So Floyd didn't win anything. Floyd had no idea what to say. He was reaching. He had a couple money lines, but he couldn't respond in the moment. The only thing that worked for him were canned lines. Connor was a wrestling promo. He was responding to the crowd, riding the wave. He was undercutting Mayweather when he got close to making a good point in almost every instance, besides the pimp and hoe line, which was a fascinating thing to watch Connor sit there with nothing to say on that one. Yep. As it regards his relationship with Dana White. But that was another thing too that felt like a low, is watch Floyd just prance around and run and try to think of something to say. He's got nothing to say. He doesn't know what to say because he doesn't have the skills that you think he does because he's so good in those edited formats, you know,
yeah.
with the props and everything and the stacks and the bricks of cash. And it turns out that he's not, he can't speak extemporaneously as well as you think he could.
It felt like a house show tour when you see the same promo night after night after night, and it goes over to Dana on the same exact moment, says the same exact thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, here's
house show tour. One guy goes, yeah, yeah, when he's trying to think of something to say for like a minute and a half. I shit you not.
Yeah, it was, God, that was tough. That was tough.
One thing I am looking forward to getting out of the way, that was your original framing of this, get this out of the way, is I can't wait for the day when I'm not walking around humming to myself, money, 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 money team, money, 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 money team. How many monies is in that second verse? I think it's like 10.
Yeah.
I'm just walking around saying money, money, money team like I'm some kind of idiot. So I gotta get that over with. I have to stop hearing that song, and it's gonna be a while.
You want to do have the Shane McMahon money, money, money theme in your head instead?
No, I don't. Ching, ching, bling, bling. What is it? Oh, my God. I want to kill myself.
And then you do the dance.
Shane, there's – no. I will not do the dance. I will not.
You will. You must do the dance, especially if the Last Fan Universe wants it.
Yeah, they don't want that. Shane, we're pretty hard on Shane sometimes. It's so hard for me because he did such a great job with AJ Styles at WrestleMania. And I was so ready to be like, can we stop making WrestleMania – about Shane McMahon jumping off of high perches. Like, he's not a wrestler. Like, can we let the spotlight shine on the guys who are actually doing this instead of just clearing the deck so a McMahon can take center stage again? When is that whole vision of WWE going to be over and behind us? But then he kicks ass at WrestleMania, you know, and shows like an ability to actually work. It's like, I can't be mad at him now. I can't be mad at him stealing spotlight because he actually is a – he actually can really have a great match if he's in there with the right guy. And we have to just accept that when they want to do something that they think is big, it's going to be Shane McMahon involved.
And I mean, the guy's doing bumps and helicopters, man. I mean, what else can he do?
What I loved about that one is at the press conference, they're talking to him for like 10 minutes before one of the reporters finally goes, "So, wait a minute, you're Vince McMahon's son?" It's like, they had no idea who he was. That was a reality check. Yeah. Like, this guy's a celebrity. He's not really.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. Final quote, one yes or no question. With Conor McGregor's next UFC fight, if he comes back, will it be against Nate Diaz for the trilogy?
Sure. Yeah, I think that would be a sensible move for them. I don't think a defense of his lightweight title against Habib, for example, or Tony Ferguson is the kind of move that at all keeps him at the plateau he's going to reach in terms of, you know, a spectacle drawing power ability. I mean, it's just going to bring him down, weigh him down to fight a guy that has no mainstream recognition, even if it's just from the perspective of, you know, the contenders rankings in his division. So, I would think something like that, something where he's not going to make anywhere near as much money as he does against Floyd. But if boxing kind of fizzles for him as an option, if he performs so poorly that it fizzles for him, he's going to want to have a fight that basically is against a star that can draw the most money you can draw in the way the UFC set up. I mean, nothing short of that is going to make any sense for him. So that's a really good, instinct, I think. And I'm sure Nate is waiting for that exact thing to happen.
All All right. Big thanks to Brett Okamoto, Kevin Ioli, Patrick Wyman, Mark LaMonica, Josh Gross, Esther Lynn, and Jack Encarnacio for stopping by throughout the last 9 months and talking about Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. There may have been some other ones I forgot, but I think I was pretty thorough in going through and trying to find all the different talks. But it kind of gives you a good indication of all these different stops along this promotional journey, and really the journey from when the fight, actually even before the fight first got announced, when Conor McGregor was looking for his boxing license or get his boxing license. And really, we didn't really know if Mayweather was going to be the guy. It could have been somebody else. You remember Brett was talking about that. So this was a fascinating run, and I am very glad to kind of see everything coming to an end, knock on wood, on Saturday night with McGregor versus Mayweather. A spectacle of all spectacles, and it should be something to see. My final prediction is that Mayweather is going to win by unanimous decision. I don't think that McGregor is. I just don't see him winning. I keep coming back to this thought and this fact that he has never professionally boxed before, and he is going in there against arguably the best defensive boxer of all time, a guy that has won 49 victories, zero losses, and has made a career in being able to evade punches and damage. And he is going in there against someone that can hit hard, but has never professionally done this with boxing gloves. And it's just he's just never done this before. We all could be completely wrong. When you just take a step back, if you were to not know the names involved and you were simply to provide these details to someone that really didn't know much, they would say, of course, the guy with the experience is going to win. Just like if Mayweather went over to the UFC, he would get worked. And granted, he'd probably get stopped very quickly just because of the various ways in which you can defeat someone. But just logically, it just does not make any sense that McGregor could win. And I think we're going to see that play out on Saturday. And for the story, my God, I hope I'm wrong. And I hope we're all wrong. For the story, would be incredible. It would be an amazing sports story, not just a fight story. And I think, as Jack and I were talking, I think really what this comes down to is kind of like, where do we go after this? How does the outcome of the fight shape how we see McGregor after this? Mayweather is going to retire and kind of go on his way, and I think that'll be done unless somehow, they try to do another Pacquiao fight or something like that. But my guess is this is going to be it for Mayweather, because there's really nothing else out there for him at this point. But really, it's kind of, what do we have left with this? This guy's not even 30 years old yet in Conor McGregor, and there's a lightweight title in the UFC he has to fight, but he has to defend hopefully at some point. But he's also, probably going to be $100 million richer after Saturday. And how does that change things? I still think in my heart of hearts that he will return and fight in the UFC. But, I also never thought we'd see this fight happening on Saturday night. So I think all bets are off. But, I think it's pretty safe to say that Mayweather is going to win. It's just the manner in which he wins and how McGregor looks is going to be the real key. And, we'll see what the ensuing chaos brings us. So looking forward to it. Hopefully you guys have had a lot of fun following the coverage on our site and other sites. There's a lot of great journalism out there. Great stories, great audio, great previews. And, everyone's kind of complicit in this, right? And trying to make this fight a lot bigger than it was, and trying to give some credence to McGregor's efforts here. And this is really a very high stakes exchange, essentially a personal appearance in a lot of ways for both guys. And we'll see what happens. It is fascinating stuff. I can't wait to actually get here and see what the results are. So again, thanks to all of you guys listening. Thanks to all the guests, and enjoy the fight. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.